Welcome to the Learning Well podcast, where we take learning seriously, but not ourselves.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to this episode of the Learning Well. We've got a fun and exciting show for you today. Today is our second installment of the back to school theme. So today we're talking to Kevin and Megan, who both have a ton of experience designing really interesting ILT or VILT learning experiences. Why don't you guys both introduce yourselves? Megan, why don't you go first? Tell us a little bit about your background and just who you are.
Hi, everyone. My name is Megan, as Miriam said. So I am the learning experience designer team lead here at Mindspring. I love being able to kind of work with a variety of content and clients and really move the process from the original storyboard all the way through to the digital content. So I'm a former teacher. I taught second and third grade. While I was teaching, I served on a variety of committees. So I was on our reading and writing committee. I was on our district school improvement team. And I really worked with those teams to provide professional development to staff.
Yeah.
So we worked really closely with helping teachers implement these new ideas into their classrooms. After that, I went and got my Master of Education in Instruction and Curriculum. And so I kind of transitioned out of the classroom and was working more on the instructional design space. So I've worked with a variety of agencies. Some have been federal, some have been state and local, including the Michigan Department of Education. And so I joined Mindspring about 4 months ago. So I haven't been here very long, but it's been wonderful. Previous to coming here, I worked for the Michigan Association of School Boards. So I worked regularly with instructors to ensure that we were really meeting member needs. I provided group and one-on-one sessions for any of our instructors, creating engagement, learner participation, and really incorporating that member feedback. So I'm happy to be here sharing all of that with you.
Well, and we're happy to have you. It's one of the reasons that I knew of your background, and it's one of the reasons I asked you. So traditionally, we found, Kevin and I know both have found in the industry, it's difficult to make the leap into instructional design as an elementary teacher, but only because of that component of the adult learning. And you had such a strong background in working, you know, teacher professional development, and then, of course, working with members for the entire Michigan Association of School Boards. So at any rate, I think an interesting side thing I sort of wanted to pass on to our audience is that it is, there's so much focus on adult learning, and that jump can totally be made, but that classroom experience is completely invaluable for what we're going to talk about today. So all right, Kevin.
Yeah, my name's Kevin. I've been with Mindspring for almost 7 years now. Mm-hmm. But before that, I was a educator as well. I taught high school at one of our local public schools. Did that for 5 years and loved the classroom, loved teaching. In fact, I still feel like there are times where I'm still in that teaching mindset, especially around this back to school season, where I see a lot of the back to school sales and I feel like I got to get ramped up for a school year.
I was going to ask if you two had the cold sweats or I've been out of it long enough, and I love teaching, but still it's like the night before you just don't sleep really before school starts.
I've got a lot of friends who are still educators and see a lot of the posts on social media recently about the back to school. And there's always the running joke, right? Like the first time you see the back to school ad in Meijer or at the local stores, they're like, wait a minute.
Too early.
They're coming too early, right? It's right after 4th of July. But yeah, been at Mindspring now for 7 years. Made that transition over from education to instructional design. But because I really love the education space, I really took leadership in a lot of the ILT opportunities that came to us over the last 6 or 7 years. So got a lot of experience, going from education to adult education, applying a lot of the teaching strategies that I used in the classroom to more professional development and ILT and VILT situations. So really passionate about that topic. I really love talking ILT. I think that there is a lot of advantage to having an instructor. Leading instruction either virtually or in the classroom. So very happy to be here and chatting about this.
Yeah, well, and I can brag on you guys and really the whole team a little bit. We're learning experts in whatever format. And, you know, today we typically use the word digitally infused learning mm-hmm. because it doesn't matter where the location is. It's everything's digitally infused in some ways. But brag on you guys. Like, we do have an incredible team of really creative people. And we that's where we've seen clients come so often, because they're just not sure. They've sort of done kind of the tired, old, normal ILT format, and they're just looking for new and creative ways. And that's the challenge that former educators love. So that's what we're going to talk about today. We're going to throw out a lot of really practical ideas. But one of the reasons that we kind of discuss this topic right now is we've already alluded to, it's this back to school kind of concept. But it's not just back to school time. We're seeing an increased trend in corporate workers heading back to the office. And so there's this renewed appreciation, I think, too, for in-person events. And we could talk about that for a very long time, right? The whole just culture of, you know, struggling working remotely and then needing the socialization and headed back to the office and what's the balance. And we don't have time for that entire conversation today. But, you know, the pendulum always seems to swing. So I remember back in the day when I I just got first started in my job. I won't say when that was, but e-learning was going to be like, you know, it's going to save the world. Yeah. And we realized pretty quickly that that was not the case, because we need socialization and humans are wired to connect with each other. And then, you know, we also saw how difficult that was, especially during the pandemic and a lot of struggles people experience. So, I'm really happy to have both of you here, because it's just fun. I think we want to throw out a lot of practical ideas today, how to do creative ILT or creative VILT mm-hmm. or even, I hesitate to say blended, because it's just really a learning experience, but a learning experience that might take all like a lot of different components. And so that's what I'm looking forward to hearing from you today. But before we do that, you are the expert. So I want to ask you, in general, what are you seeing in the industry right now as organizations return to work? Is that changing the way that training or learning experiences are being delivered? Are they a little gun shy on that? Like, what are you seeing right now?
Well, I think in general, a couple of years ago, when the pandemic started up and everybody went home to work and offices emptied, there was a huge swing and push to digital learning. We saw it, you know, in our business. We saw mm-hmm. it from a lot of places that did traditional ILT, got completely away from that. It went really quick, right?
From emergency learning.
It was emergency learning, right? You know, we can't do ILT, so we need to do something else. And so there was last 2 years been this huge push to get a lot more learning completely in a digital space. And the last few months, talking to our clients and even, you know, our own company, encouraging people to come back into the office and to get more face-to-face, there's been a resurgence in, what were we lacking doing this completely digital? Can we go back a little bit and see if we can get a little bit more engaged face-to-face, whether it's virtual, through a live call, or in a classroom again, and trying to reinfuse some of that social learning back into normal everyday training. So we have seen a lot of that, and it's coming through consulting engagements. Mm. It's coming through, we've been doing this online for a while. I wonder if there's an opportunity to go and get more face-to-face, do something better.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I would mirror that. I mean, you mentioned that we were doing a lot of that emergency learning.
Yeah.
It was like that quick switch over. We just had to do it. But then after doing it for so long, we found, some of these things are really working.
Right,
and so
right.
It's kind of trying to blend those together. Mm-hmm. People want to come back together, but we're still seeing some pros
of course.
From some of this like virtual environment. And so how do we marry them together and really infuse it with best practices?
Yeah, I don't have to tell you all, right? Like preaching to the choir here. But I think what has always been the struggle, and understandably so, is helping people outside of our L&D department or whatever, higher up leadership, understand that's not the world they live in every day. But helping them understand that what we need to do is take the content, we need to understand about our learners and what our opportunities are, and then we build the best experience possible, and that can be delivered in a lot of different ways. And again, that's nothing new to anybody listening to this podcast, but what I think it's really done is it's highlighted, I believe, for C-suites, we had to jump all online, and you know, some of that went great, some of it didn't, but it really illustrated very quickly what went well, like you've said, Megan, and what didn't. And now we're seeing it sort of swing back to center, which is where we should be. How can we take the best of all worlds and create this great learning experience? And I think at times too, now we also are faced with the challenge of we have to have parallel, right, learning experiences, because people are both at home and in the office, and how can we deliver in both ways?
Right. Yep, so. Absolutely.
Well, with this backdrop then, I think, of industry trends in mind, I'm really excited. My heart is always on these, you know, fun, practical ideas, having this conversation with you guys. So for our listeners, I sort of created five categories that I've asked Megan and Kevin to share ideas with, but I have to be honest, this conversation could really go anywhere at any time. So we don't have, like, you know, 3 points in an illustration or anything here. I've got a couple categories. As they mention ideas or resources, I will do my best to capture those too. And I'll put those in the show notes for our listeners. If you have a resource you might mention or a specific idea that they could, you know, find more information on online. So, okay, we'll start easy, right? Like, let's just talk about kind of that traditional delivery method of in classroom, you know, ILT. And I should say that, so that's in-person learning, basically, or sometimes we call it classroom-based learning, or this ILT literally stands for instructor-led, so VILT is virtual instructor-led. But what are some creative ideas and things you've done that go beyond the kind of facilitator with a slide deck, a workbook for participants, and small group discussion, which there's value in that. But we're here to share some creative and more, I think, engaging experiences. So what ideas can you give me?
Well, I think we learned a lot when we went completely digital. And I think we can take a lot of those lessons and apply them toward ILT. And one of the biggest things that jumps out to me when we're, you know, asked to put together a more traditional presentation style ILT is we suggest chunking everything down into smaller pieces, whether it's topics or presentation styles, making everything smaller. When I was a classroom teacher, I like to keep any activity between 10 to 15 minutes. I mean, that's like the best amount of time to really get attention, drive a point home, and then try something else. And I think that applies a lot in a more traditional ILT setting, even if it's, you know, presentation based. You know, and I think part of that is storytelling.
Yeah.
And breaking up a normal, you know, presentation of content by telling stories and case studies, and you know, getting a little bit more just life into the content. And again, smaller pieces, you know, hey, we're going to talk about this. Now let's talk about an example of it, and here's what happened. So infusing a lot of that storytelling in small pieces, I think, is something that we suggest usually has a really good impact on as we're piloting that that course. A lot of great feedback from the participants.
Well, and I will, and Megan, I'm going to have you share in just a minute, but I will echo, Kevin and I come out of the same high school background teaching, and it's good pedagogy, obviously, to break things up, but honestly, it's self-preservation. There is no way you're standing up in front of a group of ninth graders more than I would. Like, I went 8 to 10. Probably I was more boring. Kevin, you bring a lot of energy. But I'm like, at that point, somebody's dying. It's either you or them, so you're moving on to something else. Yeah. But it's fantastic training, because it's true for adults as well. And you need time to process and think about things instead of overloading with more, more, more. And I think as adults, because we can handle it more, sometimes the tendency as a facilitator is they can handle it. I'm passionate. I'm just rolling on. And I really think that breaking up things into smaller pieces, wrapping a story around it, or at least illustrations, definitely captures the interest of your participants in that session. What about you, Megan? What are some ideas you have?
Yeah, so speaking about, you know, kind of capturing your participants and making sure that people are engaged, when we think of, like, traditional instructor-led training, we think of the whole sage on the stage,
yeah,
like the person just standing up there lecturing, going on and on. So breaking it up with stories, but also getting the participants actually like actively involved,
yeah,
discussions, questions, small groups or whole groups. You know, as a learner myself, I don't want to be sitting there listening to someone lecture me for a large amount of time. I want to take time to process and think and ask questions and hear, you know, thoughts from others around me, because that's going to really bring home the content, and it's going to allow me to dig deeper and think about different ideas and really just expand on what we're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the key, one of the key hallmarks, right, of adult learners, is that they all bring their own experience and background to the table. And so A, they're kind of itching to share that, but B, that's one of the greatest ways you learn. And I know in so many sort of master's level programs, that's a huge part of the design of it, is you're not learning so much content from an instructor like in a traditional university setting, as you're learning from your peers around you who are involved in different industries, but also working to polish some of those same skills. So I love that, whether that's a discussion at your table, whether it's people sharing ideas, whether you're you know, kind of crowdsourcing on whiteboards around you to share ideas. Sometimes I think, well, we all learn better when we're teaching others. So sometimes it's the opportunity as well to share in your group or whatever, reframing what was just said in a different way. So those are all great ideas. You have something else, I can tell.
Yes, I wanted to piggyback on that.
Yeah,
because
sorry.
We're talking about, you know, adult learners and how they come with all of their background knowledge. And so it made me think of, you know, including scenarios and kind of that role playing almost when you're learning, because, you know, everything that adults learn, we're going to connect back to any of our life experiences, whether it's personal, professional, all of that. And so giving learners the opportunity to kind of have that safe space to play out a scenario or connect to their world, I mean, that's going to really cement that new knowledge for them.
Well, yeah, and that role playing especially is really popular and really necessary in sales training or other types of learning experiences where it's not just enough to have the head knowledge. You really have to be able to articulate it. You have to apply it to a new situation. So I will say, as an introvert, that when I'm participating in those kinds of sessions, I do not like them. I prefer to have you let me sit there. But we know as learning professionals that those are the best kinds of situations. And the more you have opportunity to practice and sort of pivot. And Kevin, I still think back to an amazing onboarding activity that you did. And I won't go into all the details, but Kevin was a client for some of our new learning experience designers and account execs. And yeah, he did not make it easy in a positive way. It was a normal client experience, lots of questions. And but he was in the role. There was an accent and everything based on what portion of the world or what nationality you were. It was great. You did an amazing job of helping our team get that sort of international flavor and what it was like. So great example. And I don't think they'll forget that.
Yeah, I've been reminded.
I was going to say. What else do you have, Kevin?
I think we brought this up a little bit, but you know, getting into more audience participation, I like just quick little poll questions, even if it's just a put your hand up for this or that, or you know, if it's a group that you've got in the room for a while, it's, you know, everybody move to this side of the room if you agree with this, or move to this side of the room if you agree to that, to get people up and about, but just, you know, even if it's just a yes or no or agree or disagree, just getting them to think and respond. You're trying to avoid, you know, the falling back and daydreaming and, okay, oh, wait, I've got I'm asked to reflect a little bit here. So getting a little bit more audience participation, even if it's a more traditional lecture experience.
Well, and I even read something the other day that I tried, and I would say I had medium success with, but I'm going to keep trying. So, you know, we tend to ask, does anybody have questions? Because you want to give time to pause. Well, rather than asking that, I said, I need to hear one question. Or somebody asked me one question. So they're literally on the spot. We are not moving until, and again, that's also the mark of a skilled facilitator, is someone who is okay with the quiet and just to let everyone sit there for a minute. I will say that I still am working on that, not the being quiet, but the asking the question in that way, instead of who has a question or is there a question?
Yeah.
Like, I'm sure there are. I'm assuming that there are. So it's safe to ask them.
Yeah.
I always phrased it as, what questions do you have?
Yeah.
Because it was that open-ended, inviting time. And then you're right, that wait time is so important. And a lot of people, I would say, especially in the virtual environment, are very uncomfortable with that. They ask it and they move right on. And you just have to sit in that uncomfortable feeling, because it will be worth it when someone is like, okay, I do have this question. I feel open to pose this now. Just let it sit.
Especially virtually, because you can say that. It's going to take me half a second to like find where I raise my hand on the keyboard or whatever, or flip my, unmute and speak my question. And by then, I've been in a ton of those sessions. People just whip right by. I'm like, but never mind.
I like facilitators who will prep the group ahead of time. Like, hey, we're going to stop for questions here and there. You know, there's, you know, cards in front of you for you to write down questions along the way. And I think even if you're prepping like that, like, hey, before we move from topic one to topic two, we're going to have two questions. So you want to make this quick, come up with some questions for me, put a little pressure on them.
Even just talking like methodology of doing that. If you have cards in the middle of the table and anyone at the table can take it and write a question and put it back in the middle anonymously, then people sitting around the table, if like you've said, you've sort of worked this into the methodology of the day, someone at the table is prepped. They have to read the questions. But nobody really knows who asked it. And so it's safe to say that, because they're just picking up a card and saying, so, you know, we had these questions.
Yeah.
Doesn't really matter who asked it. They're just reading it. And that gives some level of anonymity if somebody was uncertain or didn't really want to say they had those questions.
Yeah.
One other thing I think I was thinking is, as you talked, Kevin, we can't always do it, because a lot of times things that learning experiences are designed fairly linearly, or we need to sort of scaffold, right? So we have to start with a base of knowledge and go from there. But there are times, if we work at it, spend some time, we can flip that. And there are times when perhaps we just drop people into a situation and let them figure their way out. And then we back it up with what skills or knowledge they needed to solve that. Or even, and I know I've, what made me think of this was the session you designed a few years ago. Mm-hmm. But if it's not linear, let those adults have the choice, like you were saying, Megan. So we have six topics. Now, we probably can't just take a poll, because people are going to be all over the place. But the ability to say, you know what, like, we're going to make a decision. I'm going to start with this. We'll talk about this first. Now, what do we want to do? Now, that takes a very skilled facilitator and materials that allow you to pop from one thing to the next and not. But that allows our participants a huge choice and to kind of take control of their own learning.
Yeah, if we're talking more creative ILT sessions, I love jumping into, like you said, plopping learners into a situation.
Yeah.
We created a really fun module. It was a 4-hour session. It was teaching store managers how to kind of investigate minor issues that come up amongst employees in the store. Right? Before, you know, the goal was to stop all of the requests going to corporate HR. Let's empower our store managers and directors to see if they can figure out some of these things. So the whole process was, we're going to teach this process for how to do this. And so we designed the whole thing where we, within the first 10 minutes of the class, four different situations came up, and we role played it out where like these emails came in, and I've got to deal with these four different situations. And so then we're assign each situation to a group, and we're going to work through every one of these situations together, so you can help me come up with the best solutions for these. And then every step along the way was teaching them the next step of the process, and then applying it to the situation that they had in front of them. We did a lot of role playing in there, but the whole thing was scenario based. And the biggest feedback that I got after that was, the 4 hours was up. I was able to sit in on the piloting of that, which was really fun, and help facilitate that a little bit. And the 4 hours was up for this course, and all the learners were like, wow, like, we're done already?
Yeah,
like,
best compliment.
I've sat in so many 4-hour sessions where I'm looking at the watch all the time, like, this one snuck up on me. I can't believe we're done.
Yeah.
I love that type of that. And everything that we talked about naturally fits into a scenario like that. There's a lot of discussion. It's broken into small chunks, and they're involved in a story, and it just drives it through.
Well, and I think in that case, and correct me if I'm wrong, but you had people that had different levels of experience. Mm-hmm. And I also think as adult learners, even though we try to be charitable to people who maybe have less experience or whatever, there's nothing worse than walking into a session where you're like, we can always learn new things and all of that. But still, the first 2 hours you're like, oh, okay, And so in that situation, it really appealed to everybody there because every situation and scenario was a little different. You could approach a different way. So those that had a lot of experience could bring that to the table.
Yeah.
But there were also new things that popped up that kept them interested. And they were also sharing with those who didn't have as much experience.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So one of the things that I think we all learned post-COVID was that extreme fatigue of being on the screen all day long and whether it was a presentation or whether it was a call or whatever, we were just tired. Mm-hmm. And so to go to a VILT session and then to, again, just basically stare at a screen with a presenter who may or may not be on video, and there was just a lot of fatigue. But I will also say, having done some myself, it's very difficult to manage trying to have breakout rooms, trying to ask poll questions and pivot and make use of the whiteboard. And it's very, it takes a lot of processing. You really almost need two people to run sessions like that.
Same.
Yeah. So I would love to hear from you, kind of your best ideas, what you've seen done well, or maybe just a bit of, just help us refocus again on what best practices are to run a really good quality, engaging VILT session.
So I would say having two people, if you're able to have two people, I mean, it really does help. It allows the instructor to focus on what they're teaching, kind of listen to any of the feedback that they're getting from the audience. And someone is running the technical side of things. Mm-hmm. They might be monitoring the chat. They're making sure everyone has been able to get in, things like that.
Well, I can jump in there a little bit. In a classroom setting, the 30 to 40 seconds of the teacher getting organized to move from one thing to another kind of feels a little bit more natural.
Right.
In a VILT setting, that 30 seconds is like terrible.
100 years. Plus then people are like, I'm just going to check Slack.
Yep.
Or like, oh,
yeah,
my phone just buzzed.
Them.
You lose them.
Right away. So even, we love encouraging the use of breakout rooms and breakout sessions amongst a VILT type training. But you got to be on it, which is, again, why it helps having a second person, because if you are kind of leading up to that activity, if you could have somebody else who is, like, ready to, go, as soon as we say go, we're going to click and those breakout rooms are going to happen. Because if it's just one person, they're going to introduce it, and then they're going to sit there and they're going to form the breakout rooms and get everybody out, and you got that 30 to 40 seconds, and you lose half your audience, and then you got to work on re-engaging them.
So what do you, in terms, though, of once those participants are in those breakout rooms, what's your suggestion for, have you left them with a question or something they need to discuss? And then what do you do as a facilitator? Have you already established maybe somebody in each of those groups that's going to kind of help facilitate that? Or do you just hope as adults that they just do it? Or how does that work?
I love planning out the breakout groups ahead of time.
Okay.
So I know there's usually a random generator that you can push there and it randomly generates. But I like making them ahead of time so that you can have a point person. And you can kind of say, hey, well, I'm going to give this to you. And I always give them a document to look at or a question, or give them a specific task. It's never, open-ended. And I even, would get away from, super open-ended discussion questions. Like, I give them a specific task to get through. If you're discussing, I want you to discuss this and this and this, and somebody's taking notes, and we're going to report back as a group, and kind of making one person a point person. I think that has the best effect, and it stops a lot of the, because all of a sudden they're unsupervised.
No, but we're all adults.
Facilitator here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Who's going to take the lead? Who's
going
to do this?
That's true.
We actually going to discuss? But, getting somebody there to kind of lead that session through until the whole group gathers again.
Yeah, I think it's really important to be clear about your directions before you send them into breakout rooms. Sometimes instructors will kind of just babble through everything that everyone's going to do, and it's not super direct. So I always suggest, before you send them into breakout rooms, you say, all right, we're going to do this. One person is going to do this. Another person is going to do this. You have 5 minutes. I will see you back here in a certain amount of time. What questions do you have? So then that way I've been very specific about what they're going to do with their time, and then I've given them that time limit, and they go off and they know what they're doing. There aren't any questions. And then they're using that time wisely instead of getting in their breakout rooms and going, what are we supposed to do?
Yeah.
I don't remember. Does anybody else remember?
Well, right into that point, even a simple thing, but I've done it myself. I have a slide up that tells them what to do, but then they go to breakout rooms and the slide disappears and we're like, wait, what are we supposed to do? So that's just a tiny thing, but that really can just kind of, then everybody spends their time wondering what they're supposed to be
learners
doing.
Learners love structure, and learners at every level, from the kindergartner up to adult learners, they love structure. They love knowing what's happening.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's a time and a place in a learning experience where people maybe don't need to know, and they need, but it's one of the objectives, right?
Yeah.
Is to sort of learn by experience, kind of struggle through it and figure it out. But by and large, providing that structure is really the best path towards meeting your objectives. So beyond VILT, our breakout rooms and that sort of thing, I know you had some other ideas. I've seen polling done badly, mostly, by myself as well, right? Because we just want something different, so we throw a poll up there, but it doesn't really matter if anybody answers or not, or what their answers are. Like, I just keep going with my presentation. So what can you recommend to make polling more effective?
Well, I think piggybacking on the idea that having a second person to help facilitate is super helpful, because they can help monitor the polling a lot. I love, if you put a poll in the field and answers are coming in, obviously the presenter doesn't want to pause to wait for everybody to come in, but I love having a second presenter there to say, hey, wait, this person just said this, what do you think about this? And almost interrupting the primary presenter a little bit to throw those ideas in there. Because the whole point of the poll is to help, you know, modify and shift the discussion going forward. We need that feedback. But then again, you don't want to sit there and wait for a minute for everybody to answer and then try to gather it together in your head to move forward. So yeah, your second presenter really helps in those instances.
Well, and that's just a thing we do naturally in an actual ILT, not virtual, right? But I've put people in groups and they're discussing, or I poll them, but I'm looking around the room and I'm reading body language and I can see where people are confused, or they say something and I can play off of that and I'm on to the next thing. And again, we miss what usually gets missed in any kind of e-learning or digital or virtual is sort of that context. And I can't see body language, and I might notice this person even is struggling, but the rest of the group doesn't.
Yeah.
So they're wondering what's happening. So those are all reasons why we have to be far more intentional and deliberate about setting the context. And I love your idea of two presenters almost with that sort of fun banter back and forth and like that, hey, hold on, Kevin, somebody here has a great question, you know, like those kinds of things.
Exactly.
I think make it a lot more engaging. All right. So Megan, I know you had one other thing you wanted to share with us.
Yeah. The only thing that I wanted to share was you're only going to get better by doing it. So
I know
it can be scary at first. I feel like there are a ton of instructors that are like, no, I don't know how to do it. I don't want to jump into it. You just have to do it. You have to try. You're only going to get better with practice. And having that second person, you know, can be helpful if you run into any issues. But just go for it.
I like the idea of practicing ahead of time.
I do too.
Get a couple of your friends together to jump on that Zoom link or that Teams link and practice getting those breakout rooms set up and practice putting the poll in the field. Nothing like being stuck on a tech problem in the middle of a presentation.
For sure. Very true.
And I will say that with COVID, like, there has been a great leveling of the playing field where I think people are generally more sympathetic too. So now is the best time to start practicing some, because we all kind of get it.
Absolutely. So. That's a great point.
Well, I know you all have some really other interesting ideas. Sometimes I'm not really sure where to categorize them. You know, they can be called blended, or we have social learning and all different types, you know, or just face-to-face or whatever that might be. But what kinds of kind of really maybe creative ideas have you seen that really foster that socialness? In the corporate space, we tend to often talk a lot about like pre-work and post-work. In our world, we prefer to, at least I do, call it, it's one big learning experience. It's not the work before the work or the work after the work. It's all part of a learning experience, and it might be delivered in a variety of ways. But just throw a few fun, interesting ideas out there.
Yeah, well, I want to talk real quick about blended learning, and that's, you know, mixing the modalities of in-person, maybe virtual, or completely asynchronous, and using an online module. I've been a part of a lot of online modules where I've looked at a material and go, oh, this would be so much better in a discussion format or live in a classroom. And I've been part of a lot of classroom presentations where I sit there and go, gosh, I could have done this on my own so much better, right? And so if you're forcing one or forcing the other, there's always going to be those things that would have worked better. If you approach it and say, okay, what we're going to do is we're going to create a blended learning experience. We're going to look at the entire learning experience from start to finish, identify the topics, identify the activities, and we're going to match them with whatever works and makes sense. So this topic would work really good for learners just to dig in ahead of time and to complete asynchronously. And then once we've got to that point, then we're going to discuss it, or we're going to do this activity. And that activity will work best in person. Being able to apply best practices for every situation is super, super important. I found the best learning experiences we've created have been blended like that, because you're not trying to force something that doesn't fit because you have to. It's we have full choice and full freedom to design this to the way that it should be based on the learning objectives and what the learners need. So I found tons of success designing those blended opportunities.
Well, and if you look at learning science, or even very simply, like a Bloom's taxonomy, real simple, but the kinds of things that are generally best suited to online delivery or e-learning are facts, kind of that bottom level of the pyramid, right? Like basic facts, basic knowledge, skills. Now, again, we do a good job designing those, of course, which is always our goal. We can always get people to think higher and work through scenarios. But if we had our best choice, right, best practices, those are the ideal things. So like you said, somebody's learning some things online, and maybe there's like a little quiz to make sure they understand the vocabulary, or with even I think with so many tech tools at our fingertips, like we've designed apps and things where people are learning vocabulary ahead of time. So that's not a hurdle, or some basic principles. And then they come to a classroom session, and that's where, like you had mentioned, Megan, now we're doing this role playing, because I can do that online, but it's not great. It's and if I'm an account exec, I enjoy being with people. So I want to practice those things with people. And then we provide those nudges or that reinforcement afterwards, or maybe extend their learning. And maybe that's back, to some e-learning, or maybe that social learning at that point. Like we have a setup, doesn't have to be a formal discussion forum. It could be. We have a Slack channel where we're discussing, like, hey, this just happened to me today. What do you think I should do? And those kinds of things. So what about you, Megan? What ideas do you have?
Well, I'm just thinking of what you just mentioned. So I think it's all about using the time most effectively. Mm-hmm. You know, if I am going to ask learners to watch a video, do we really need to do that as a whole group?
Right. No. Good point. Like, that's a great point.
Everyone can take the time to watch it by themselves. And then it's more individual. Like, you know, if I'm watching it at home and I'm like, this doesn't really make sense, I have the opportunity to pause it. If I'm watching it in a whole group, I just kind of have to go with it. So it can really, this blended learning can really like meet everyone's needs.
I think what we've always talked about and always advocated for was the best delivery method possible when we're allowed to. COVID didn't allow that, right? Prior to that, I think there was a lot of resistance at times to e-learning. COVID forced us into that. Then we saw some of the negatives of that. And we're coming, like we talked about, that pendulum swing back. And I also think with so many tools available, like social media too, and I understand that that's a lot to corral. As a learning and development team, we're used to putting a course in an LMS and we might run a discussion and it's all good and it's contained and it's nice and neat. But we have so many opportunities for informal learning, and we're seeing like the rise of the LXP where, you know, learners can jump in and YouTube videos are added, and it's tracking that, and it's tracking them taking a course out of Coursera, or like all just different ways that they can learn. Maybe they can track the fact that they spent 15 minutes shadowing someone, like all those different pieces that allow us to do this really amazing learning experience and pull in all different kinds. So that's back where we're at again. We can't always do that.
Yeah.
But when we can, that's what we're constantly striving for.
And it really does make it accessible for everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about virtual. There were times in the past where we may have done a certain training in person and we decided this really fits best in the virtual world because we were able to have more people participate because they didn't have to worry about traveling to it, things like that. So taking all of those into account and then letting the content drive the modality, I mean, those are all what should be top of list.
Absolutely. Yep. All right. So to wrap up here, before we go on to my the end part of the, you know, what are you learning well, which is always my, I wouldn't say my favorite, but the, to me, a very fun part of the podcast. But last chance, throw out any just creative, interesting things. Maybe you've never even done them. You just want to. I can see Kevin's over there. Like, if somebody would just let me.
Exactly. So yeah, I obviously taught in a high school situation for 5 years, and I had a lot of experience mixing up my classroom routine as much as possible to keep students engaged. Mm-hmm. I've taken a lot of those and began applying them to when I'm hosting professional development. Adult learners love doing the unique things just as much as the students did. I don't know, it seems intimidating if you're, oh gosh, I've got an hour, I need to present for an hour, I got a room full of people, what am I going to do?
And they're all adults, they're all staring adults at you, so there's some judgment in those eyes. No.
there's a lot of fun ways to mix it up during that time. I always love doing, I called it, I call them little, you know, mini debates, but it's not really a debate. I like asking maybe a polarizing question or a question that people are going to form different opinions on, and getting them to walk to either side of the room. Hey, yes or on this side, no on this side. And once I get them, then they, you know, for adults, they'll do a little eye rolling about, oh, I got to stand up. But in general, it's more show than anything. They enjoy it. Get them on the other side of the room and, hey, why did you choose this side? You know, and there's no right or wrong answer. It's you know, let's just talk about this. Why did you choose this side of the room? Oh, why did you choose this side of the room? Okay, and then everybody back to your seats. And it creates a fun little, you know, 6 or 7 minute activity. I love breaking a large group into small groups and covering a topic from like a jigsaw presentation standpoint. I'm going to give you this topic. Your group is going to research it and talk about it and put together a 2 or 3 minute presentation about it, and do that with 4 different groups. And so then they all work together on coming up with this, and you give them a little bit of instruction for what the expectations are, and then you hand it over to them and they're presenting. So you can take this 60-minute time period, and you throw 2 or 3 of those into it, and all of a sudden, the longest time that you have to present is only maybe 10 minutes at a time, and just makes the whole day go really, really fast. You mix it up, and the learners really enjoy it.
Well, and to what we were talking about before as well, it's also an opportunity for, if you know that day is coming, you can put them in groups ahead of time, we've talked about shared documents or collaborating ahead of time, virtually, at least doing a little research. They can come prepared almost to go to that next stage, which also uses your time more efficiently, and you're able to really learn more into that time. But absolutely, having people teach others is always the best way to learn.
Yeah, especially, and Megan mentioned this earlier, but you've got professionals in the room who are experts in a lot of these areas, and it will approach it from a different perspective than maybe you. And you want to share that expertise and encourage people to share their expertise, because you're going to get so much more out of the topics if you've got people sharing all their different perspectives and their experience.
I would even suggest that if you have the opportunity, you let learners choose which topics they want to teach to others. Mm-hmm. Because, we've talked about incorporating choice, and they're adults and they want to, dig into the topics that they're interested in, or they either know a lot about or they don't know about and they want to learn more about it. And so instead of necessarily setting it up ahead of time, provide the topics that they can pick from, and then letting them choose which group they want to join.
Yeah, I love that. That's a great point. And we talk all the time about motivation in learning. There's a motivating factor right there. It's both my choice and also something that either I get to showcase my knowledge or I'm genuinely interested and want to learn more.
Yeah, I think if there are instructors out there who are a little bit intimidated about trying to encourage something like that in their presentation, like, oh, do I get enough buy-in? I'd suggest just doing it. Organize it ahead of time. Present it well. Get excited for it. Mm-hmm. It may seem like something that you'd do in high school or whatnot, but if you present it the right way, the learners will get into it. I've had tons of success with it. So even if it feels like, well, I'm not sure they're going to get the buy-in, the way that you present and the way you organize it and set it up, they'll fall right in line. They'll love it.
Absolutely. Love that. Megan, I know you have one last thing too.
So I thought of including games.
For sure.
We talk about some differences between, I taught elementary school, so students and adult learners, but one thing is very similar. People are competitive. And so including some games is actually super fun. We did a game most recently that Kevin created. It was Jeopardy game.
Yep.
After one of our team meetings, and everyone bought into it. We were very competitive. We were trying to win, and just like it made it fun. It engaged everybody, but it wasn't that difficult to set up ahead of time. So I would encourage just some fun and some games mm-hmm. like that to kind of round out the learning experience.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we could honestly have an entire podcast just on games in the ILT space, yep. right? Board games. All kind. I actually was, we recently moved offices, and so I was digging through some of my files, and I found some homemade, basically like cubes. And so we had designed a game, and on each side was written. And again, speaking to that choice, like it puts a game element into it, but basically participants just had to roll the dice and whatever popped up, that's what we were on to next. So it wasn't even very complicated from my perspective. I just had to make them. Mm-hmm. But I found in our closet trash cans that had labels on them. And then there was going to be, I'm trying to think, I think we threw paper into them or we had to, I don't remember now, yeah. but just like game elements. But it doesn't have to be, I think games feel overwhelming, like oh I have to design. No, you can incorporate just little game elements that get people up, getting moving, mm-hmm. moving around, rolling a dice, whatever the situation
yep,
may be.
Absolutely.
So, all right, well, there are obviously, we could go on and on and on, but I think our goal today was just to sort of spark interest. Hopefully those of you that are listening, even what we've said maybe sparked something in your head, an idea. But one of the things I love to do at the end is to ask, what are you learning well now of our guests? So again, a play on words with the podcast, but we're always interested in knowing, what are you learning? How are you learning it? So I don't know which one of you wants to go first, but we're going to end this podcast hearing about what you're learning well now.
I'm happy to share this.
All right.
So actually, you brought up the topic earlier, introverts.
Oh, okay.
So we didn't even plan that.
No, we didn't. Perfect.
So a few months ago, I finished the book called Quiet, The Power of Introverts in a World That Can't Stop Talking by Susan Cain. And it was something that, you know, I would identify myself as an introvert. And just wanting to know more about what that means. You know, I need time to recharge in quiet places. It doesn't mean that introverts don't like to be around people.
Right. That's a common misconception.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It just means that we process things differently and we need some time away after we've been around lots of people or noises or, you know, things that are happening quickly. So kind of after I finished that book, there was another topic that was brought up, and it was highly sensitive people, which can be shortened to HSPs. And it's different, like it's even different than being an introvert. So it's talking about people who, it's a personality trait that they have, that they may be more sensitive to bright lights, mm-hmm. loud noises, chaotic environments. They may feel like emotions more strongly or be affected by others' moods.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I'm learning so much about myself because I would describe myself mm-hmm. as being an HSP.
Mm-hmm.
Not something I knew before. You know, there can be commercials that make me cry instantly. And my husband looks at me like, are you okay? But it's because like, it's just affected me on a different level.
Right.
And so I have just found it so interesting kind of knowing about this personality trait that I have, but then not seeing it as a con. You know, mm-hmm. Just because I may feel emotions or be affected by something doesn't mean that it has to be this negative thing. So learning how to use it to you know, really showcase the different abilities that I have. You know, I'm able to notice subtle changes mm-hmm. in the environment. Mm-hmm. You know, people were like, oh, well, I've never even seen that before. I'm like, oh yeah, I've noticed mm-hmm. that before, or mm-hmm. something changed or whatever. So that's been a topic that I've been digging into.
Well, if you have any other resources on that, I'll have you give them to me. So I'll definitely link to the book in okay. the show notes as well for our listeners. So Kevin, you have a wide range of interests. I always ask this question with some hesitancy.
Yeah, it's a dangerous topic.
Because we could go from chickens to, I'm not sure. So here we go.
Well, I'll go way out of left field, but you know me too well, Mary. I was going to talk a little bit about a lot of what my family has been learning and working on a lot this summer has been producing a lot of our own food.
Yeah.
and it's something new. I grew up in the city, kind of in the suburbs, and it's only been the last couple of years where we've kind of moved out to the country a little bit and taken a closer look at what we're eating and what we can grow and produce on our own property. And so this summer we spent a lot of time gardening. We've got obviously a flock of our chickens that we get a lot of our eggs.
We benefit from that.
Yes. Everybody around Mindspring has gotten a dozen eggs or so here or there. But we've spent so much time this summer learning about how to grow food, how to do it effectively, how to store food, you know, stuff that we're producing. We have a lot of fun in the evenings. We try to, as much as possible, make family dinners out of everything that's been produced on our own property.
That's great.
And it's just a lot of fun. Our kids really get into it. Like, oh, these are our potatoes, and these are our green beans, and these are our eggs, and, you know, this is our own chicken that we raise that we're eating. So it's been a huge learning experience, something I never imagined myself getting into if you would have talked to me 4 years ago. But it's something that we've really dove into, and there's so much to learn about it. And a lot of useful, you know, social media groups, a lot of people to kind of taking a step back from, you know, traditional, you know, food and looking at what we can do. How can we create a little homestead? What can we produce? What can we do for ourselves? So it's been a lot of fun. I know I spent a lot of my time and energy this summer working out in the garden, which is fun because it's a great balance from work.
Right.
You know, going outside. And you know, my wife has been canning foods in the evening, so we got jars of food stored up for the winter. And so, it's just been fun. It's something that's brand new to me, and I love talking about it.
No, and I find it so interesting. So, Megan, you had mentioned reading, and then that piggybacked to another, you know, topic. And I don't know if you're reading or watching video or
a little bit of everything. Okay. So I did find a book that I've been reading on that topic. It's called The Highly Sensitive Person by Elaine Aron.
Okay.
But I've also subscribed to some different, like, quote-unquote experts on social media and things like that, just to, you know, get the learning in various ways.
Well, no, I love that. And then, like Kevin, you were saying, there's social media groups, and there's just so many different ways. And I know personally for myself, I've been trying to this summer figure out a better way to curate that. So there's value, and I'm not just like scrolling, which even at that, you know, it's just time to put the phone away. But if I am scrolling, and what am I looking at on Instagram, like you said, some experts or articles or things that contribute to my learning, or is it just mindless for no reason? So I love that. And then I will also say shout out to Kevin for, because we benefit not just from eggs but from other vegetables. And I grew up on 9 acres. I grew up forced labor in the garden. So I will say I'm always happy to support local and go to the locals farmers market. I feel like I'm supporting them. Also, they do a much better job of raising those vegetables than I ever would. But no, I love that we have all just different ways of learning and different things around here. And that's kind of what creates just such an exciting place to work. So thank you both. Thank you for bringing your creativity and your expertise. I hope that, and I know it has sparked just some thinking for our listeners. So, and if you're listening and you're looking to interact more with us, you can find our posts on Mindspring's Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn every time we release a new podcast. And we're hoping to get more interaction, so feel free to post and respond there. But thank you all for listening. We know your time is a gift, and we thank you for choosing to spend it with us.
Thanks again for tuning in to the Learning Well podcast. If you enjoyed what you heard today, please leave some feedback on whatever platform you're streaming on. We'd really appreciate it. We'll see you in the next episode.